May it please the Court. My name is Ron Wachkowski. I represent the plaintiffs, appellants, Bill and Marianne Cunningham in this case. The principal issue before the Court concerns whether the District Court erred in excluding the expert testimony of Dr. Dwayne Hauser. The District Court excluded that testimony on two grounds. First, it found that Dr. Hauser was not qualified to offer an opinion on the cause of the Cunninghams' respiratory ailments, and secondly, it found that his methodology was unreliable. On both points, I submit that the District Court was mistaken and has been too aggressive in performing its gatekeeping responsibilities under Rule 702 and the Daubert case.
I find his report very unsatisfactory. I'm looking at the executive summary. It says she had, in the mid-1990s, Mrs. Cunningham had recurring respiratory problems, ultimately diagnosed with asthma, short-term memory loss, severe headaches. All of these symptoms were secondary to chronic toxic PCE exposure. That's not true. Her asthma is not caused by this chronic, PCE stuff. Right?
That's precisely what Dr. Hauser concluded. That her, and just
what did he conclude?
Precisely? That her asthma was caused.
No,
by
but it's
exposure.
Not. We know it's not. She has a whole long history of asthma, and she has asthma after the removal of this stuff.
And Dr. Hauser explains that after you have had irritant-induced asthma, the research shows conclusively that 70% of the persons who develop asthma as a result of an irritant-induced asthma continue to have it after they are no longer exposed. The research and the literature on that is clear.
Also, they've got all this stuff from their photographs, right? You have asthma. She obviously has tendency to asthma. Right? It's a family asthma, family problem with asthma. What's she doing with all this developing photographs?
The only evidence about asthma, that there's no evidence of asthma in her family prior to this exposure. The only other evidence of asthma is of her daughter and granddaughter, both of whom were exposed to the same air contaminated by PCE. And Dr. Hauser, in terms of who's the best person to say what's the cause of this asthma? Dr. Hauser was the director of the asthma clinic at the IU Medical School. He has practiced and treated asthma for 40 years. He has written and lectured extensively on asthma. And
yeah, but not people who... It's one thing to be an expert on a disease. It's another thing to be an expert on a particular cause of the disease, right? PCEs, that's exotic.
It is, I think, correct, Your Honor, that not every person who is an expert in the treatment of disease will understand its cause. It is, I think, would be highly unusual for a person who is board certified in allergy and immunology, where allergies are in fact induced by certain causes, for a person with that kind of expertise not to have expertise in what causes, in the instance of asthma, the inflammation and the irritation that in this instance led to permanent asthma for Mrs. Cunningham. Dr. Hauser, in his 40 years of practice and in his position as a professor at the IU Medical School and director of the asthma clinic, is, I think, a person who is ideally suited.
Or does he try to separate the PCE exposure from the exposure to the photographic chemicals that the Cunninghams were exposed to?
That specific issue is not addressed in his report because he didn't regard it as a significant issue.
Isn't that an important issue?
Dr. Hauser, the expert in this area, did not regard it as an important issue. He was asked about it in his deposition, and he dismissed it because the levels of exposure arising from the photographic chemicals that were in use in this closed system, and the research and his knowledge in this area showed that those chemicals would not at all be responsible for...
Based on the level of exposure?
Pardon?
I think you said the level of exposure.
That's correct. And we have information and data on the level of exposures to PCE.
You have that.
Pardon?
In fact, that's
one of the errors that the district court made. The district court said that Dr. Hauser did not determine the dose and duration of the chemical in question. In fact, his report specifically identifies data from 1996 prepared by an environmental consulting agency hired by the Attorney General's office. They went inside the Cunningham building in 1996 and obtained data showing that the PCE level within that building was 1,000 times the action level set by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Nobody told the Cunninghams at that time that their air was contaminated. They surely would have left if they'd known that. But they weren't told. They continued living there and working there 24/7 until 2003, when IDEM and the EPA did additional testing, including testing within their building, and found that the PCE levels were still hundreds of times the acceptable level for PCE in the air in their home. So they had established data both as to the dose, that is, the amount of PCE in the air, and as the duration. In fact, the evidence that Dr. Hauser pointed to from both the Battelle report, which extrapolated backwards because of the source of this contamination, had in fact stopped operating in 1985.
Was the source the operation or the storage of the chemicals? Or do we know?
Well, obviously Dr. Hauser was not an expert on storage or the operations, but I think the evidence of record is that it was both, that the PCE was stored inside this building and that in the operations of the masterware dry cleaning facility, there were significant problems with both spillage and with the chemicals seeping into the ground. In fact, because the groundwater was contaminated at extremely high levels and the soil contaminated by extremely high levels, that is the most likely cause for the vapor.
Why has her asthma persisted after she ceased to be exposed to this stuff?
As Dr. Hauser explained in his deposition when he was questioned on this, and as the research study that he cites in his list, it is the fact that once you have an irritant-induced asthma and your respiratory system has been inflamed by that, in 70% of cases, even though you withdraw from that irritant, you continue to experience
That's
asthma.
That's not in this report.
The study is cited in his report.
The statement you just made is not in this report.
Correct. The study is in his report. The statement that I just made, and at page 118 of the appendix, there is specific discussion of this issue,
but
which is part of the record.
The report has to stand on its own 2 feet, doesn't it?
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. The issue
sketchy little report and then fill it out in a deposition?
No, the report has to provide adequate disclosure of the opinions and basis for them.
If she has asthma caused by an irritant, and then the source of the irritant is removed, you'd think the asthma would go away. If not, if there's some scientific reason to think it would linger, then you'd expect that to be in the report because it's a very important point.
I'm sorry?
It's an important point. You'd expect it to be covered in the report.
The report is obviously important and needs to have adequate disclosure. When the issue is whether an expert witness is to be excluded from trial.
Should he be speculating about their developing cancer?
Pardon?
Should he have been speculating in the report about their developing cancer?
Well, I think it's...
That's really speculative.
It's fair for him to comment on what the evidence is regarding cancer. The issue that we are presenting to this court is not his opinions on cancer. He's an expert in respiratory disease, an occupational respiratory disease.
Why is he talking about cancer? It's not his field.
That when you're
just to jazz up the report, make it a little more frightening.
When you are concerned with whether a particular substance is toxic or not, the fact that it causes cancer is relevant.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's like, as he said, well, if she'd swallowed that PC, it would have dissolved her esophagus.
The literature with respect to PCE includes discussion about its effects on cancer.
He's not an
oncologist. He is not.
If you want to charge them with causing cancer, you have to get an oncologist.
I agree. We have to get an oncologist.
So why is that in his report?
But we are not proffering that.
Why is it in his report?
He's reciting what the literature shows with respect to the consequences of TCE. He does not say that they've gotten cancer from TCE. He doesn't say.
Why is it in his report?
The literature shows that it increases the risk that he will get cancer.
I don't think it should be in his report.
I will apprise him accordingly. But his what is in his report and what's clearly the focus of his report is his opinions regarding respiratory disease. And that's a subject on which he is an expert. And that's a subject on which he did look at all of the relevant literature. He relied in part, and this is what I was going to point to as well, on page 131 of his deposition, which was submitted for the district court in considering whether to exclude his testimony. And that's the point I wanted to complete a moment ago, Your Honor, which is that on an issue of whether an expert is to be excluded, it is not limited to what is written within the four corners of the report. The court is appropriately to consider everything that is submitted at the time of the motion to exclude, and that included, for example, discussion during the deposition. One cannot anticipate every potential area of attack that one might get in an expert report. And so it's to consider everything. And among those things is not only the literature which he reviewed, but also his experience. For example, he talks on page 131 that, in answer to the question, "Sir, are you aware of any other studies about occupational asthma and PCE?" "No, but people who see chronic asthmatics or occupational asthma, there are many chemicals that have been reported to cause irritant-induced asthma. PCE is in every list of the triggers that do that. So there would be no need for someone to report that." That is, there's not very much literature on this because it's on every list, including the official government list. I know I've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Are there other people who have gotten asthma because of PC exposure?
The Dr. Boulay study, which he makes reference to on page 131, is a study that addresses irritant-induced asthma and PCE.
You're not answering my question. Are there other cases in which people have gotten asthma as a result of PCE?
The ATSDR report, the government document, the government document prepared by the agency assigned for this responsibility, specifically states that irritant-induced asthma is caused by PCE, but I cannot cite another.
I asked you an extremely simple question. Yeah. Are there other cases in which people have gotten asthma from exposure to PCE?
I assume the government wouldn't have said that if that wasn't the case.
Why don't you answer my question, yes or no, or I don't know?
I cannot identify another person.
In these 40 years, I think we maybe mentioned maybe two exposures to PSC or with a
I'm
patient.
Sorry?
With a patient. He hadn't, in his 40 years, he had almost no contact with this.
He identified 20 instances where he had dealt with occupational volatile organic compounds causing respiratory issues.
Something other than PCE.
And the volatile organic compound in question was not PCE. He didn't identify any prior cases of PCE.
PCEs are very common. They're a big focus of environmental concern. Seems odd that if they there's never been another asthma case from PCEs.
PCE is in every list that cause occupational asthma for some reason, but I cannot identify what those are.
I understand you. You've got a major set of pollutants, these PCEs. They've been around for a long time. There are a lot of people walking around with asthma. But there's never been a case in which PCEs have been blamed on asthma before. I mean, which asthma has been blamed on PCEs. Seems very strange.
As I said, I can't identify it, but obviously the Agency for Toxic ATSDR wouldn't have said it if there weren't.
Oh, you're asserting there are such cases, you just don't know about them?
That's correct.
And Dr. Hauser doesn't know about them.
Pardon?
You don't know about them, and Dr. Hauser doesn't know about them. But they must be out there. Is that what you're saying?
Dr. Hauser noted in the quote that I just gave that it's on every list of triggers that cause occupational asthma.
He never has actually encountered such a case. You don't know of any such case.
Not until this one.
But you're sure they're out there somewhere.
Not until this one.
Not the first.
And the agency responsible for this specifically.
First.
I do not think this is the first. Otherwise, the agency wouldn't have said it.
What agency was that that reported it?
The agency... I want to make sure I get the precise name. For Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, that's the agency that's delegated this responsibility by the federal government. And at page A151 of our appendix, we show you its official publication specifically identifies that exposure to PCE causes irritant-induced types of asthma.
So that report didn't say it.
Pardon?
That report did say, without...
Didn't identify individuals, but says that's what it causes. And Dr. Hauser, the expert, says the reason why you don't have it in the literature because every list has already identified it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wojciechowski. Mr. Campline?
Thank you, Your Honors. Please, the Court, Bruce Campline for Masterware. I want to begin by just focusing on what the data is. The Cunninghams rely upon data collected by this Patel company in 1996, and he refers to them at page 4 of his report, the appendix record, page 78. Those exposures, and I've made all the exposures on the same quantification number, parts per million. The report lists them in parts per billion, but in each of those findings of the five locations at the Cunningham place, all of those findings were less than one part per million. The U.S. EPA's Section 106 order, issued in April of 2004, set a standard for cleanup. And a cleanup standard, there's no testimony in the record that says that this cleanup standard is a health standard, which I would interpret to mean that at this level of exposure, human injury does in fact result. The letter that EPA sent to the Cunninghams in December of 2003, which is at appendix record page 146, they were exposed for a sampling in September of 2003, 200 parts per billion. So if we convert that to parts per million, that's 0.2 parts per million, or less than one-fifth of one part per million. The Tetra Tech EM report that EPA had done in 2003 that Dr. Hauser refers to at page 5 of his report, appendix record page 79, shows these three locations on two dates. The calculation is in micrograms per cubic meter, but one converts that to parts per billion, and in his report, Hauser says that the site buildings finding was 200 parts per billion. So again, if we convert that to parts per million, that's 0.2 ppm, or one-fifth of one part per million. ASTDR, which is something the plaintiff wants to rely upon, appendix page 147, it says that at 5 to 50 parts per million, most people can smell trichloroethylene in the air. At 75 to 100 parts per million, can cause mild ocular irritation. At levels of 216 parts per million or more, produce respiratory tract irritation. And at parts of 100 to 300 parts per million, there's observed central nervous system effects like sleepiness, headaches, loss of coordination.
Now, is that over a protracted period of time, or is it sort of immediate?
It does. That report just says those at those levels, these consequences might occur.
Was it when you walk in the room or if you live there for...
Doesn't say. But we do know from OSHA.
Is that the same report Mr. Wojcicki was referring to?
Yes, the ASTER at page 147 of the appendix. But if we look at OSHA, OSHA's permissible exposure limit for an 8-hour work day is 100 parts per million. And we know that the Cunninghams only worked in the building for a majority of the period of time before they bought it and resided up on the second floor. So arguably, the OSHA 8-hour PEL would apply 100 parts per million, but they are only exposed to less than one part per million. OSHA's ceiling for a 15-minute exposure, Judge Mannion, if you came in the room and you were exposed at 200 parts per million for 15 minutes, OSHA would say that's a ceiling peak level, and you should not be exposed to 200 parts per million. OSHA also has a 5-minute maximum peak in any 3 hours. So within your 8-hour day, you can't exceed 100, but you can go up to 300, but not above 300 for any 5-minute period. And then NIOSH, which is the enforcement arm of the CDC, says the immediately dangerous to life or health level is 150 parts per million, and the plaintiffs were exposed to less than one. Now, the literature that Mr. Hauser relies upon, Dr. Hauser relies upon, is, in our view, highly deficient. He cites basically when we ask him, or actually when he told us that the literature supports his conclusion, he says it's well documented in human and animal studies. Well, that just isn't so. We look at the AOKI publication in 1994, which is the rat study. They took a bunch of rats, exposed them to 300 parts per million, euthanized some of the rats during the 5-day period, and it found that there was an increased impact to the smell senses of the mucosa that generates smell, as opposed to the respiratory part of the mucosa. The only other document that Dr. Hauser relies upon is the Wolf publication from 1975 in the Annals of Allergy. And that's got just one little paragraph about perchloroethylene. And all it does is cite to a 2-column report in the Journal of American Medicine about someone suffering edema, an employee of a dry cleaner. But in that report, it never tells us how much the fellow was exposed to or for how long. And even Dr. Hauser...
The study that... that your opponent mentioned at the end, which says that PCEs cause asthma, does that discuss the exposure levels required for that?
It only reports that the exposure level was 216 parts per million could cause irritant respiratory disease. It doesn't say asthma, but I guess Dr. Hauser would interpret irritant respiratory disease to be the same thing as asthma. But what's interesting, I wanted to point out in that AOKI article, what they did, they put the rats in a chamber, gassed the chamber with a concentration of 300 parts per million, and then they vented the experimental chamber. But when they vented the chamber, they had to be sure that the discharge was at 50 parts per million, which is a Japanese level for ambient air. So even the discharged air from the experimental chamber was 50 times higher than the exposure to which the Cunninghams were exposed. The point that I think the district judge found, and then Judge McKinney taking over the case concurred, that the rat study, the one case of edema, the article by Wolf, and even the Stewart article about breathing sensitivity were not enough, and nowhere in any of those reports that said that if you're exposed to one part per million of PCE for any period of time, that you're going to get ill as a consequence. And because of that deficiency in the scientific literature, there was no appropriate methodology by Dr. Hauser to reach his conclusion. He failed in finding sufficient facts to support his opinion. He just says, it's chronic, it's acute, it's chronic and it's toxic. Well, when we ask him the question, what is toxicity, he says anything that's toxic. Well, That wasn't really a very good answer.
Counsel, was there any evidence that the product which contains PCE has warnings on it?
Yes, it did.
What did the warnings say?
I don't think the warnings were ever made part of this record in this case. They may have been part of the record in the case filed by the United States EPA, but they weren't part of the record in the Cunningham case. And as this court recalls, that this case was consolidated for discovery with three other lawsuits against my client, one by the federal government, one by the city of Martinsville, and then there was a declaratory judgment action filed by the insurer of my client saying that it did not owe a duty of defense and indemnity. That raises to another issue in this case about the disclosure of Flavin and Washburn. They weren't disclosed as experts in the Cunningham case, and Judge McKinney, I think, properly said that the ruling of this court is that in cases consolidated for discovery purposes only, unless less agreed to or ordered otherwise, notice of expert testimony in one cause or number is not notice of expert testimony in another.
Somebody gave notice.
In the Ohio Casualty case.
Yes.
Yes. But in this case, on April 4, 2007, the Cunninghams disclosed as expert Hauser and Bomba. They never produced a FRCP 26 expert disclosure by Hauser in this case by April 4th of 2007.
Well,
and on that basis, Judge McKinney excluded their testimony.
So even though the fact that I'm only reading part of this document, which is a disclosure of the fact that they served expert report of Stephen T. Washburn and Mark Flavin on all parties by electronic means.
Mm-hmm. We got the Southern District uses the electronic docket, and we got the report through non-PACER means, but we did get the expert report filed in the Ohio Casualty litigation. But it was never tendered to the court and not made part of the docket of the Cunningham case that they were ever going to use Flavin and Washburn as experts. Yes, they were on their witness list, but so was Billy Cunningham and his wife and my client and his wife and a bunch of other folks. But in that final list of witnesses, nobody in that list was says John Smith, expert. It just had his name and his address, which is all that FRCP 16 would require. And I just want to briefly comment about Billy Cunningham. It wasn't raised by my colleague, but the point of that case is that Judge McKinney didn't preclude Mr. Cunningham from testifying as to what his property was worth. Rather, he wasn't going to permit him to say, oh, I got these two appraisals. I bought it for $50. I got an appraisal for $105. Then I got another appraisal for $135. But then I sold it for $105. The point of the matter is Cunningham doesn't have any personal perception of the bases for those appraisals. And the key point is he wants to offer testimony that the value of his property was diminished because of its contaminated state. He doesn't have any personal perception of those realities. Because Dr. Hauser's opinion was excluded, Flavin and Washburn were excluded, Billy could not testify, and there would be no other evidence as to the why the property was diminished in value, if at all, Judge McKinney granted my client summary judgment. I believe, based upon what we put forth in the record, based upon the raw data that was available to Dr. Hauser, the absence of scientific literature, which results in the lack of general causation, followed by a lack of specific causation, Dr. Hauser's opinion should be barred by the evidentiary gate by 702. We would ask this court to affirm the district court. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Camplain. Mr. Wykukowski, how much time does he have? You don't have time, but you can have a minute or 2 minutes if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess first I just wanted to correct one answer that I gave before when the court inquired as to whether Dr. Hauser had dealt with the issue of photographic chemicals in his report. I had said I didn't recall that it was there, but it... In the appendix at page 882, he in fact discusses...
What? I'm sorry?
It's at appendix page 82 in the third paragraph on that page. He addresses that issue of the photo development chemicals, concluding with the statement, contrary to popular lay opinion, acute or chronic formaldehyde exposure, which is the the substance that arises in that is not a common trigger of respiratory problems.
Not a common trigger? What does common mean?
Well, I would assume that he's saying that in his experience that that doesn't happen, and that's coming from a person.
CE is not a common trigger of asthma.
That's correct.
No,
it is
irrelevant. Right?
It is very.
If you have a person who has an ailment, the fact that a particular event, chemical, what have you, is not a common cause of such an ailment doesn't mean once you have the ailment, that narrows the search. And
as to whether he considered it, he also noted that the chemicals are always used in a closed rather than an open system, which is, he understood it meant that that the exposure to anybody
what
as
does
a result
that mean?
Of that.
What does it mean, chemicals are used in a closed system?
My understanding of that, Your Honor, is that it means that the chemicals are maintained inside a container such that they are not allowed released into the environment or the adjacent air, that they are part of an enclosed system, and therefore that the risk of inhaling those chemicals is reduced.
Well, if you
as
develop
opposed to an open system.
Film, you certainly can smell there's something in the air, right? Have you ever developed pictures?
I personally have not, but I've been in the vicinity of that, Your Honor.
No, there's obviously some chemical in the air.
It is.
Whether that's the dangerous one or not. I didn't understand how Mr. Cunningham can give testimony about the effect of this contamination on property values. Why wouldn't you call a realtor or someone who would say, this is what properties are worth in this neighborhood, you know? This is what his would be worth, but because of this contamination, you know? Wouldn't that be much better evidence than a homeowner's perception of the causes of property falling?
I think it certainly would have been better evidence to employ an appraiser with expertise in the effects of contamination on property value. Indiana law, however, also says that an owner of property can testify about the value of his property.
No, look, this is a federal case. Federal procedure governs what counts as admissible evidence, right?
The rules of federal rules of evidence
apply. To experts, and we're under all the other federal rules of evidence regarding who can testify as to what.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Do you have anything further you want to say?
I guess I just wanted to conclude with this point, which is that Dr. Hauser, in addressing the issue of respiratory disease and looking at the exposure over 18 years and working full-time and for 10 of those years living full-time on a 24/7 basis, came to the conclusion that two things which started during that time period, asthma and hacking cough, were respiratory diseases were caused by that exposure after reviewing the literature.
He says the exposures were too low.
He does say that, Your Honor.
Well, that these studies on which Hauser relied involve much higher exposures.
There are no exposures for 18 years at levels of 6,000.
No, look.
Those are exposures for 15 minutes.
No. What he said, maybe he's wrong, but what he said was that you can work and, you know, 8-hour day after day, as long as you're under 100 parts per million. That's what he said.
He says that's
day after day. I mean, if you're talking about permissible exposures for a worker,
he said
that's indefinite. That's not. That means you could do that for 18 years and you'd be okay.
That's the IOSHA standard. He didn't mention that under. If you're in Indiana, under the item standard, if you have a fraction of that, they're going to require you to remediate that problem.
But where does Dr. Hauser discuss the different standards? And he can argue with them, presumably, but where does he say that there are all these variant standards and some think 100 parts per million is okay and others presumably think it should be lower? He mentioned this Indiana something. What?
Yeah. I know that in his report he refers to the IDEM standard requiring, I believe it's on page A78, in the middle of the page. There's a sentence that begins, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management action levels for indoor air for PCE are 110 micrograms per cubic meter for immediate and subchronic exposure and 6.7 micrograms per cubic meter for chronic exposure.
What about all the other standards that permit much more? Wouldn't a responsible expert say, well, you know, some people think it should be 100, others 200, a million, one, what have you. Wouldn't he say, then explain why he thought the more demanding standard was more accurate?
He wasn't opining on what the proper standard was. He was opining on what the cause, the medical cause was of these respiratory diseases. And he believed that based on all the research that he had done and his 40 years of experience of treating respiratory ailments, that if you're exposed for 18 years...
He cites this Indiana Department of Environmental Management action levels. That's fine. He relies on that. He thinks that's important. But what if there are, as Mr. Camplain said, there are lots of other standards which are much more permissive? So couldn't he explain why there are these discrepancies, why the scientific world, environmental world, can't agree on what's a dangerous level of these PCEs in the air?
I know that he was questioned about that and addressed that issue in his deposition. It's not in his report. His report was intended to explain why he believed that that these respiratory problems arose from this very long-term chronic exposure to high levels of PCE.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Wykensky and Mr. Camplain.